You don't take the first thing you see. You only take whatever you need to sustain yourself. To sustain yourself for you and your family, not anything more. And then you leave some for the future generations. If you don't do that, what are you causing? You're causing destruction of those seven generations to come. And when we stop to give thanks, he warned us, the peacemaker warned us, when you don't give thanks, you will start to see those things disappear. And what's happened? The passenger pigeon's gone. There's species dying every day. They say that, you know, when you plant corn, you know, we have whole ceremonies that talk about, you know, planting rites and songs that go with it. And everything that we do has a spiritual connection. There's that sacredness that was given to us. We follow our original instructions as given to us by the Creator. When this world came into being, it was nothing but water. I think within every creation story, there seems to be that commonality that, you know, there were floods or it was all water here. And within our creation story, there was nothing but water here. And until one of the animals went down into the depths of the water and took the earth that was on the bottom of the river, the ocean, and brought it and put it on a turtle's back. So because of that, we call this place Turtle Island. And we need to start claiming back our names. Ontario, Undalio means beautiful lake. Schenectady, Skanadadadi, it means on the other side of the gum. What does it mean? The gum of the tree. When you talk about Kana Johari, I think that's the English word. It's really not Johalega, the place of the clean pot. The St. Lawrence River was called Ganawaga, the place of the rapids. So, you know, it tells you the significance of the place that we are. So we need to start claiming that back and trying to tell the rest of the world, you know, that spiritual connection. We also need to start giving thanks. Give thanks to the waters, give thanks to Mother Earth, give thanks to everything that has been provided to us. And we need to follow what the peacemaker said. One dish, one spoon. This earth we share. There's only one resource here. You know, unless we create another planet and we go to there. But we all live here in this one earth. And we need to make sure that we give thanks, that we only take what we need to sustain ourselves, and we make sure that there's stuff there for the future generations. If not, what are we doing? We're destroying ourselves. Before, you know, one of these days, we're going to be the species that are gone, because we're also not giving thanks to each other. So I give thanks for coming up here, and I give thanks for everyone who's attending. And I hope you bring these words that were given to you back to your home and back to, you know, not just have Thanksgiving, when is it? The end of November? But have it every day, you know? Have it when you wake up and have it to close the day. That's the important thing. And to teach your children and your children's children how to get along in this world. The other thing about the sacredness of water was used as metaphors within all our teachings. When you look at our treaties say, you know, we will sign this agreement as long as the grass grows and as long as the river flows. The river is still flowing, and those treaties are still alive. Yeah. Those treaties are still living. We have to start using a good mind again. When we talk about cleaning Onondaga Lake, we need to make sure that the species within that lake can survive. We share. There are brothers. There are sisters. You know, if that fish doesn't live anymore, what's that saying about us as species? Do we have power over that species? One might think so. But eventually, while everything else leaves, we're next. We're just around the corner. And it may come. But within our prophecies, we also know that as people, we can change that. We can change the outcome. We can stop some of the prophecies that are happening. And one of the prophecies say, we will buy our water. I couldn't believe that. When I heard that in the 60s, you know, we were drawing water from the St. Lawrence River. And I thought, you know, this is a mile wide. And it's, you know, I forget how deep it is. And how can that kind of resource be gone? Well, today I'm buying my water. It's a fact. Buying my water, and that prophecy has come true. With the Great Lakes, there's a rush right now to privatize the water. You have seven states and two provinces who are rushing to claim jurisdiction over the water of the Great Lakes. Mm-hmm. Jurisdiction? I mean, it's supposed to be shared. And when it starts being privatized, the control over people will be water. If you don't believe that, then, you know, can we survive without, you know, H2O? Can you create it? Maybe. Can we get it from the oceans? Maybe. But it's going to cost us a lot. So we really need to think where our future is going.
I want to thank Joyce for coming to help us.
You've been listening to Robin Kimmerer and Jeannie Shenandoah speaking last October in Syracuse, New York, on the Haudenosaunee practice of sustainable land management as part of the educational series Onondaga Land Rights and Our Common Future. This is Unwelcome Guests, and you're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, KWMD Kasilof Anchorage, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, WUOW Oneonta, KRBS Oroville, WKNH Keene, Radio Veronica US, WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, or WMRW Warren. The time has come to say fair's fair, to pay the rent, to pay our share. The time has come, a fact's a fact. Belongs to them. Let's give it back. How can we dance when our earth is turning? How do we sleep while our beds are burning? How can we dance?
Back.
Amato is an attorney specializing in environmental law who has been working on behalf of the Onondaga Nation in their efforts to clean up Onondaga Lake and the waters that flow into it. Recently, the state of New York put forward a plan to clean up Onondaga Lake, drafted in collaboration with the Honeywell Corporation, whose subsidiaries were some of the major polluters. The Onondaga, as well as many others, have criticized the plan as grossly inadequate. Chris Amato will explain why the plan is inadequate and engage in discussion with a panel of Onondaga and settler representatives about what ought to be done.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for your invitation to have me come speak at this conference. It's really an honor to be sharing, being part of a program that has on its roster such distinguished scholars and activists. Looking at the program, it appears that you've all had an opportunity here, a really diverse group of people come to talk to you about a lot of issues that relate to the problems that Onondaga Lake is facing today. And now you get to listen to a lawyer. This is not everybody's idea of a good time, but hopefully I can keep your interest. I've been asked to talk about what I would characterize as a deceptively simple issue, which is what happened to Onondaga Lake. And I say it's deceptively simple because when you look at what has happened to Onondaga Lake, you can see that there are several different levels that you can approach this question from. Now, on one level, you can look at Onondaga Lake, look back historically to a time when it was a pristine cold water fishery that provided spiritual, cultural, and subsistence nourishment to the Onondaga people. You can trace the beginnings of European encroachment and settlement, the development of industry along the shoreline of the lake and the tributaries, and the eventual utilization of the lake as a convenient dumping ground for industrial wastes and sewage from the increasing population in the area that became known as Syracuse. You can look at that as one aspect of what has happened to Onondaga Lake, but the story of Onondaga Lake is also, I believe, the story of what has happened in New York State. And I think that the case could be made that the story of Onondaga Lake is really the story of what we have done to the environment in this country as a whole. And at another level, what has happened at Onondaga Lake, and in particular, what is happening at Onondaga Lake today, is a symptom of a very deleterious shift in the way that people in this community, in this state, and in this country are beginning to think about the environment. And I like to refer to this as the vanishing point of reference problem. And basically, what this really means is you have a pervasive loss of environmental quality such that highly polluted environments become the norm. And it suddenly becomes acceptable to have highly polluted air, water, and land because you've lost the reference point of what it used to be like. And I'll be talking about that a little bit further on in this discussion. So let's look at the first level of Onondaga Lake, which is simply sort of a history of what happened with the industrial development around the lake. And here, probably the most important date would be 1793, which is the time at which James Geddes started the first salt manufacturing facility on the shores of Harbor Brook. That really marked the first large-scale industrial process connected with Onondaga Lake and the Onondaga Lake watershed. Subsequent to that, in 1844, the first soda ash production facility was built on the western shores of the lake itself. That was followed in 1881 with the formation of the Solvay Process Company, which then, a few years later, began the production of soda ash. In 1896, the first city sewers were built, and they discharged the untreated sewage directly into Onondaga Creek and Harbor Brook. So what happened as a result of this first surge of industrialization? Well, what happened was that by 1897, basically 100 years after this industrialization process began, whitefish had disappeared from Onondaga Lake. The significance of that being that whitefish are pretty much the barometer of a cold water fisheries. The cold water fisheries that existed in Onondaga Lake was being destroyed as far back as 1897. 3 years later, in 1900, people were told it's prohibited to harvest ice from Onondaga Lake because of potential health issues. So early on, it didn't take very long for the industrialization and use of the lake as basically a dumping ground to start having some pretty serious public health and ecological implications. Well, it continued on and actually worsened quite significantly. In 1918, Solvay began to manufacture chlorinated benzenes, and I'm going to be talking a little bit more about what that means. In 1922, the city completed a new sewage system which discharged untreated sewage directly into the lake. In 1940, all swimming was banned. In 1950, Allied Chemical, which was the successor to Solvay, started chlorine production by the mercury cell process. By this time, other industries had located in or near Onondaga Lake, including General Motors, Crucible Specialty Metals, etc. So by 1950, you had a pretty heavy industrialization, not only of Onondaga Lake itself, but of the uplands and along the tributaries to the lake. By this date, 1950, Onondaga Lake was really, for all intents and purposes, pretty much a dead lake. It was nothing more than a convenient sewer and dumping ground for industrial waste and human waste. Well, what exactly has been the effect of all this industrialization in real terms, in terms of what's really going on with the lake? What are the chemicals that are involved here? Well, we can state with some degree of specificity what's going on with the lake today in terms of what chemicals are there, because of the process that's been initiated at the federal and state levels to remediate hazardous waste sites. So what happened was, with the passage of hazardous waste laws at both the federal and state levels, the regulatory agencies who had sat on the sidelines while all this was happening were vested with the authority to come in and try to clean up the mess. So you have EPA and DEC given broad legal authority to formulate what are euphemistically called cleanup plans for these various hazardous waste sites around in New York State and the country. Now, this process with regard to Onondaga Lake formally began in 1989 when the state filed a complaint against Honeywell, which in turn was a successor to Allied, under the federal Superfund law. That action is still ongoing, and it's in federal district court in the Northern District, and it really provides and has provided the legal framework for everything that's been happening with regard to attempting to address the problems at Onondaga Lake that are related to the industrial sources. And with regard to the non-industrial sources, the sewage treatment problems, that process has been pretty much occurred within the framework of a lawsuit that was filed in 1988 by Atlantic States Legal Foundation. That case, too, is still in federal court, and it still is providing the legal framework for the attempt to deal with the problems that are associated with the discharge of untreated sewage into Onondaga Lake and its tributaries. I'd like to jump right into the issue of the chemicals that are in the lake today, because in order to understand why the Onondaga Nation is opposing the cleanup plans that have been proposed by EPA and DEC, it's first really necessary to understand what's at the core of this problem. And the core of the problem is we're dealing with some of the most toxic chemicals that are known. And not only are we dealing with toxic chemicals that are known human carcinogens and have a multitude of adverse public health impacts that are documented in the literature, but we're dealing with them at levels that boggle the imagination. But to begin with, it's important to understand that as part of that federal and state hazardous waste remediation process, the agencies are required to identify the pollutants that are on the site and to inform the public why these pollutants are an ecological or public health threat. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read from a document produced by EPA and DEC. It's called a Record of Decision. And the Record of Decision is the regulatory agency's decision-making document where they chose the remedy for the Onondaga Lake bottom. And that remedy involves some partial dredging of highly contaminated sediments and then what's called capping for much of the remainder. So among the chemicals that the agencies have identified as being in Onondaga Lake are what are called BTEX, which is benzene, toluene, ethyl benzene, and xylene. These are all highly toxic chemicals. Let's just take one of them, benzene. Chronic exposure to benzene can result in central nervous system depression, immunosuppression, bone marrow depression, degenerative lesions of the gonads, fetal growth retardation, damage to genetic material, and solid tumors in several organs. Chronic exposure in humans can result in bone marrow depression, anemia, and leukemia. Breathing benzene can cause drowsiness, dizziness, and unconsciousness. Benzene is a known human carcinogen. Chlorinated benzenes. This is another group of chemicals that are found throughout Onondaga Lake and tributaries. Chlorinated benzenes are resistant to chemical and biological degradation and tend to accumulate in fat-containing tissues of animals and humans. Chlorinated benzenes have been shown to cause adverse reproductive effects in invertebrates and fish. Chlorinated benzenes can bioaccumulate in humans and cause adverse health effects such as liver damage. Mercury. Mercury is a known human and ecological toxicant. Methylmercury-induced neurotoxicity is the effect of greatest concern when exposure occurs to the developing fetus. Other adverse effects of mercury include reduced reproductive success, impaired growth and development, and behavioral abnormalities. Polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, PAHs as they're known. Some PAHs are known to be carcinogenic. Several PAHs exhibit low levels of toxicity to terrestrial life forms, yet are highly toxic to aquatic life forms. PCBs. PCBs bioaccumulate in the fatty tissues of humans and other animals. PCBs are considered probable human carcinogens and are linked to other adverse health effects, such as developmental effects, reduced birth weights, and reduced ability to fight infection. And finally, PCDD and PCDFs, which are basically dioxin and dibenzofurans. These tend to be very insoluble in water, absorb strongly onto soils, sediments, and airborne particulates, and bioaccumulate in biological tissues. These substances have been associated with a wide variety of toxic effects in animals, including acute toxicity, enzyme activation, tissue damage, developmental abnormalities, and cancer. So that's the regulatory agency's description of some of the chemicals that are being found in incredibly high concentrations in Onondaga Lake and its tributaries and nearby upland areas. In 1996, the Centers for Disease Control and the New York State Department of Health collaborated in a study on the public health effects of Onondaga Lake. And their conclusion was as follows, and I'm quoting directly from their study. Onondaga Lake is a public health hazard. Fish from the site are contaminated with mercury and PCBs at levels which could cause a high risk of adverse health effects. Fecal bacterial contamination of the lake poses a potential health hazard to recreational users, particularly swimmers. And the conclusion of the study was that over 200,000 people are potentially exposed or have been exposed to contamination from Onondaga Lake. So that's the background of what we're dealing with. And it's probably not too surprising given the history of what's happened out there and the use of the lake for industrial discharges and sewage discharges for such an extended period of time. Now, the solution to this problem, as devised by Honeywell with the approval of DEC and EPA, is to go into the lake and dredge some areas. And for other areas, to build a cap, to basically attempt to entomb these highly toxic chemicals and just pray that it doesn't get out. Because that's really what it boils down to. There is not a single engineer at DEC or EPA who will tell you that this cap will not fail. They will not guarantee it will not fail because they cannot guarantee it will not fail. Caps have already been shown to fail at other Superfund sites for a variety of reasons. And this cap certainly is not going to be lasting in perpetuity. It defies any sort of engineering sense to believe that any kind of human construction of this sort that's underwater and subjected to all the ravages of nature is going to survive in perpetuity forever and ever, and none of these chemicals are ever going to come out of there. The fact is that they are going to come out. And what we're doing is we are taking this problem and we are dumping it in the laps of our children and our grandchildren and their children. And that is not a solution. And that is why the Onondaga Nation is opposing this remedy, because it's not a remedy. It's a postponement of the day of reckoning when somewhere, someday, someone is going to actually have to deal with these chemicals. And let's talk about what is being left in the lake. Honeywell and DEC and EPA like to trumpet that 2 million cubic yards of sediment, of contaminated sediments, are going to be dredged. Well, that's great. But over 20 million cubic yards of highly contaminated sediments are going to be left behind. As a matter of fact, the nation's consultants, Stratus Consulting, did an analysis of this remedy and concluded that after this remedy is implemented, that if a regulatory agency came to Onondaga Lake post-remedy, the lake would qualify for listing on the federal Superfund list, which is the list of the most highly contaminated hazardous waste sites in the country. And that's just because of the volume of highly toxic material that the plan is to leave in place there. Now, the unfortunate fact is that this cap and contain approach to hazardous waste sites is basically what DEC and EPA are planning for virtually every part of Onondaga Lake and its tributaries. All of the various hazardous waste sites, be they underground lagoons or leaching contaminated groundwater or contaminated sediments or contaminated soils, contaminated dredged spoils, whatever it is, put a cap on it. Just cap it. That's the solution. Well, it's certainly an inexpensive solution compared to actually taking the stuff out. But I would submit to you that it's not a solution because it's simply postponing the day of reckoning. In concluding on this subject, I would just like to go back to what I said earlier about the vanishing point of reference. And I think what is probably the most disturbing thing about what's going on in Onondaga Lake today with regard to the so-called cleanup is that this is sort of the accepted approach to how we deal with these problems. We're becoming numb to the degree of pollution that we live with. We're coming to accept as rational and normal that you can't eat fish, that you can't drink the water, that the air is polluted to breathe. And to me, that seems like a very dangerous place to be heading toward. To give just a few facts, today there are over 1,000 hazardous waste sites that have been documented just in New York State. In New York State, there are statewide fishing advisories telling people do not eat more than one meal of fish per week from fish caught anywhere in the state. Go up to the Adirondacks and you look at the Department of Health fish advisories for isolated lakes in the Adirondacks, and the advisories say don't eat more than one meal of fish per week from these waters. And if you're pregnant, it's best not to eat it at all. or if you're a child under 15, it's best not to eat any of these. And why? Because mercury pollution. Pollution is so widespread and ubiquitous that there are literally hundreds of water bodies in New York State that have been identified as being, quote, impaired under the Clean Water Act. So what's happening? What's the result of all this? Well, the result of this is that we have generations of kids who are growing up thinking that this is normal. Nobody remembers when you could go out and eat fish without worrying about contamination. Nobody remembers when you could go on to any beach on Long Island and eat the shellfish. Nobody remembers when you could drink water anywhere in the state and not be worried about chemical contamination or sewage contamination. And the fact is, the further that we get away from that time, the more removed we become from the reality of what a quality environment really is. And the scary thing is that you do have generations who are growing up in an environment where fish advisories, health advisories, closed areas, hazardous waste dumps are all sort of part of the normal picture of, you know, this is where we live. Well, what this does is it really skews our whole frame of reference. And I think Onondaga Lake is a great example because I have heard this remedy referred to by regulatory agencies, by academics, by other folks involved as a cleanup. The idea that anyone could think that going to this lake and removing a tiny, minor fraction of the amount of pollution that is in that lake and putting a cap over it that is certain to eventually fail and calling that a cleanup is a real symptom, in my view, of how our frame of reference has been skewed, to be able to call that a cleanup. And I think what's really probably the most troubling part of what is being proposed out there is that you can read the record of decision and the supporting documents, and you can look, and you will not find what the goal of this supposed cleanup is. It does not say we want to be able to eat the fish from Onondaga Lake by such and such a date. It does not say we want to be able to swim in Onondaga Lake by such and such a date. You will search in vain for any reference to those goals. And because there are no goals set forth, there is no way to measure the success or failure of what they are planning to do in Onondaga Lake. The nation and its consultants have repeatedly asked, to no avail, how are you going to figure out whether this remedy works or not? How do you know if it's working? What are you going to be measuring? Do you have a target? Do you want the contamination in the fish to reach a certain level before you can say it's a success? Those questions go unanswered. The fact of the matter is that there are no goals, and there is therefore no yardstick by which to measure whether what they're planning to do is going to be a, quote, success or a failure. Well, what can we do? We can stand up and be heard. We can refuse to settle for these so-called remedies that dump these problems in the laps of our children and grandchildren. We can tell politicians and the regulators that we're not going to settle, that we can and we must do better. We can clean up Onondaga Lake. It takes political will, and it's going to take a lot of money. But think about how much money Honeywell made by being able to dump its industrial waste for all those years without having to have it treated or taken to a depository where it would be isolated from the environment. In short, we need to change the terms of the debate. We need to demand a cleanup, not a cover-up. And as Sid Hill, the Tadadaho spiritual leader of the Haudenosaunee, said in one of the meetings with DEC and EPA, he put it so simply. He said, we want to be able to eat the fish, We want to be able to drink the water. To settle for less, I submit, would be to surrender our responsibilities to future generations. Thank you very much.
Thank you. When we planned this evening, we weren't prepared for having a new situation and the remedy before us. So I'd like to change perhaps a little bit the format and the plan, and bring the panelists up. But before we move into what was to be the second part of this evening, which was a conversation on restoration of Onondaga Lake. What should it look like? What might it look like? What can we do to get there? To have the panelists first have a chance to ask questions of Chris and make any comments, and then to get that from the audience. And then we'll move into the discussion about looking into the future and finding that common ground that is the point of this whole series of how we move forward together. So I'd like to invite the panelists to come up to the stage. I'll introduce them as they arrive. Ed Michalenko with the Onondaga Environmental Institute and one of the most knowledgeable and clear speaking of the people who have worked on Onondaga Lake for many years. Rick Smarden from the Faculty of Environmental Studies at SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry, somebody who has worked a long time on Onondaga Creek and Onondaga Lake. Jeannie Shenandoah, environmentalist, herbalist, midwife, healer, teacher. And Brad Paulus, one of the leaders at Onondaga Nation of the Eel Clan, also the son of one of my favorite teachers in the world, Chief Irving Paulus, and an educator at the Onondaga Nation School. So we have a real collection of fine minds to try to address both the questions of as to where we are now, but where we can go in the future. So first of all, any questions that you have for Chris or comments about his presentation before we move on?
Yeah.
And also try to speak directly into the microphone.
I think I have a little history. Ed does as well. You all have history. I was called by Senator Monahan in 1990 and asked to be chair of the Citizen Advisory Committee for the Lake Management Conference, and suffered about 6 to 10 years of that, and now we're working on Onondaga Creek revitalization. So I think I have some perspective, but I think you're right in terms of the frame of reference. I think the challenge that the Onondagas have posed to us is as a community to address the nature of the resource. And for years and years and years, basically we as a community, at least the European side of the community, have neglected Onondaga Lake and potentially the creek as well, because we haven't taken ownership of it, we haven't paid attention to it, we haven't realized the values. And any restoration situation that I've seen, it's usually the ability of the community to engage the resource, to call attention to it to that level, that there is a dialogue going on and there is a realization of some of the issues involved. And I was frustrated early on in the Lake Management Conference because basically the public dialogue was very limited, and that was a real problem.
Well, one of the things that I'd like to comment on, it builds on what Rick had to say and what Chris had to say in regards to that frame of reference, but a very little advertised goal of the current management plan for Onondaga Lake, and it's the 1993 plan of action that came out of the Onondaga Lake Management Conference that Rick talked about and has been adopted by the Onondaga Lake Partnership, which is still the management entity for the cleanup of the lake, and that is a six-partner organization of the Army Corps, the EPA at the federal level, the DEC, and the Attorney General's Office at the state level, and the City of Syracuse and Onondaga County at the local level. And that management plan recommends the reconstruction of a cold water fishery. And that's the law. And so we get back to the question of political will, but will the current regulatory community enforce that?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because that we have brought up that issue with DEC and EPA, and that is an issue that they do not want to touch with a 10-foot pole with restoration of the Coldwater fishery in Onondaga Lake. And it's unfortunate because, you know, once again, you know, you come back to the issue of why are you doing something that you have no measure of success, you don't have any articulated goals for? What is the purpose of doing it? At the end of the day, you won't even know whether you succeeded because you haven't set yourself any goals. So, you know, one of the things we've been trying to push for is that, you know, one of the endpoints of this whole process should be Onondaga Lake should be restored to a cold water fishery the way it was before the industrialization of the lake and its tributaries destroyed it. That's restoration.
Brad?
I have a question for, first of all, Neil Hoskin. Explain to me how the construction of a steel wall will bring back, restore the lake to what Onondagas remember our lake as. As far as we know, there was no steel running through the middle of our lake. And we want to know how that kind of structure would be looked upon as restoring Onondaga Lake to what Jeannie so eloquently spoke of yesterday, of something that is so sacred and so to the people, and by to not shouldn't just be us, but to all of us sitting here. How does putting a metal wall and filling it in with gravel restore our lake?
Well, I think you put your finger right on the point, which is that it's not restoring the lake any more than putting a cap on highly contaminated sediments is restoring the lake. I mean, you know, are you really going to enjoy boating and fishing on a lake that you know is sitting on top of literally tons of sediments that if you came into contact with them, you would run the risk of some serious adverse health effects? But this is the legacy that the regulatory agencies and Honeywell are bent on leaving us. And it will be what results unless there is a concerted and organized effort to stop them in their tracks and to really restore the lake and really clean up the problems there. And it's certainly going to cost money, but I think if, you know, you look at the financial statements of companies like Honeywell, you know, they certainly have resources, and they, I think, should be required to expend those resources to clean up the mess that they've made.
Jeannie, do you?
Mm-hmm. Hey, Jeannie, over there.
I would like to comment on the order for the cold water fishery. It just gives me the shivers to think about it, because we just went through this whole long discussion and all this information about it's not really clean. It's a true cover-up, that's what it is. It's not the true facts. And now they're talking about returning a cold water fishery and expecting people to fish there. Fishing is supposed to be for eating and sustenance. Those fish were put there to live in clean water for us, for us to feed on. What they're talking about is just the recreational part of it, I guess. Catching a fish and throwing it back in, I think that's pretty cruel, if you ask me, hooking up a fish. I just can't see how they can expect to expect people to believe this and use it. Those fish were put there. They were part of the whole plan of creation for us. All the food that's put on Earth, plants that grow, plants that we grow, the animals are there. The animals are there, but we always give thanks for them. We give thanks for everything all the time. That does not include catching a fish with a hook and throwing it back in. I don't care how big or small it is. And the other thing is that there are some people that are going to eat those fish.
There are some people eating those fish now. Unfortunately, they've been eating them right along, and they hear about those warnings, but maybe they're not in an economic situation where they can completely cover all of their diet. So people like that have to just close that part down and not listen to it because they need to supplement their food. So that's always going to be there if that isn't totally cleaned up. It's a true cover-up. We're talking about this cover-up, Monomon. The whole deal is a cover-up. Is that what you want?
Yeah, I mean, I would just like to briefly just follow up on that because, you know, one of the things I think it'd be worth, if you're interested in really understanding the serious problems with this proposed remedy for the Onondaga Lake bottom, is to read the comments that were submitted by the Onondaga Nation to EPA and DEC regarding this remedy. And just to give you sort of a sense of how inadequate the remedy is in terms of protecting public health and the environment, our consultants did the analysis, and as part of the process, EPA and DEC are supposed to come up with these, quote, safe levels for various chemicals such as benzene and PAHs and so forth. So they did that. The amounts of chemicals are going to be left behind were pointed out by our consultants. And just to give you sort of a sense of the magnitude of the contamination that's going to be left behind, benzene will be left at over 1,300 times the purported safe level. PAHs will be left behind at more than 22,000 times the safe level. Ethyl benzene will be left behind at more than 9,000 times the safe level, and mercury will be left behind at almost 1,400 times the level identified as safe by the regulatory agencies. That's what I mean when I talk about the legacy that's being left behind for subsequent generations to deal with.
So I'd like to, I mean, I know we could go on with this much of the evening, but I think it's important to put our minds, often as the Haudenosaunee say, put our minds together as one and to look to the future as to what would be restoring Onondaga Lake. What would that look like? What would we begin to do, and how do we move from where we are now to where we want to be? Emmanuel, I know you've done an awful lot of thinking about restoration and from many different perspectives. And you want to start us off with that?
Well, as a follow-up to the things that we've been saying over the last few minutes, it seems to me that one of the difficulties, certainly one of the initial difficulties, is that there is no standard. And it looks as if the real sense of how we'll know when something has been done is that Honeywell will have spent all the money they agreed to spend, and that will be essentially the end of the venture. What I find is an unfortunate situation right now is that there seems to be no concern by the municipalities that are along the Onondaga watershed, no concern that watershed has something to do with the quality of our collective future, with the quality of the identity of the sense of place, with the quality of our ability to interact with the landscape around us. And it seems, again, as if there's a collective sense that if someone has agreed to spend a certain amount of money to minimally meet the federal requirements, that will be as far as the process goes. I think we can think of many other communities in the Northeast, around Lake Champlain, certainly in the Adirondack Mountains, along the Hudson River, where the communities would take an active role in helping to set a standard that should be arrived at, and that seems not to be happening. We're having a regional planning failure at the moment.
And what, I mean, you've talked a lot about Syracuse, what Syracuse could be. You often compare it to a wonderful, similar size city in Spain, and like, what would your vision, given the fact that so much of the land around Onondaga Lake is, quote, publicly owned, so we have a lot of opportunity there. What do you see happening?
Well, under the best of circumstances, I think what will happen is that the municipalities along the watershed and the people that live along the watershed will begin to collectively think of this as a signature element of our sense of place and treat it not only as a draw. We often speak of these landscapes as it'll draw tourists. I think that what's much more important is that it be a nurturing landscape for the permanent residents. Because all of your future populations are really coming largely out of the population we generate among ourselves. And I think that if you do have a strong sense of identity, a strong sense of place, and the idea that the landscape supports a range of values that are important and clear, then you're likely to keep the new generations cycling through in this community. I think one of the difficulties that this issue shows is Robin Kimmerer spoke earlier this morning about the difference between living in a place that is part of you, you sort of wear it, and treating it as a series of parcels that are property, that are commodities. And I think that we're in a position right now where we are seeing our landscape as a series of parcels that can be bought and sold, just as we treat our housing. We buy, then we sell, and we buy up, and we move across a landscape that way without ever investing heart and soul into it. So, I think that, again, that the municipalities and the populations have not simply said, okay, we need to work together to make this a signature of who we are, is indicative of the depth of the problem. This morning in the workshop, we were talking about a place called Vittoria Gasteiz, which has examined itself in terms of its regional context and taken all of the natural systems in that regional context as a signature, as something that is indicative of the extent to which the population believes in a sense of community and a sense of place. And they have used their history, particularly their history of migrating herds from winter to summer feeding grounds as a way of building a logic for protecting that regional landscape. In other words, wherever the traditional routes of cattle and sheep herds have been, and in many cases still are, you use that as the skeletal structure for the kind of landscape that you want to protect. A watershed is, of course, a very logical skeletal system for that kind of protection. But I think we have to make a fundamental change, not the Onondagas, I think the rest of us have to make a fundamental change in what we think the watershed is all about. It isn't something that you look at as a one-shot cleanup deal, and when the money runs out, well, that was it. This situation's over. It's a lifelong commitment for all of the lives that come through through this territory. It's something that you become attached to.
It's amazing, really. We've gone through these 9 months of these programs and learned about Onondaga Lake as this sacred and historical place, as a birthplace of democracy, as a birthplace of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, as such an incredible center for advancement of humanity. And then we hear about, the condition of the lake. And I guess I wanted to ask Jeannie and Brad, how would you know that we as a community finally took Onondaga Lake as seriously or as sacred as you know it to be? What would you need to see?
Part of that question is the identity that you have with this area. We are Onondagas, we'll forever be Onondaga, and our children's children will be Onondaga, and we're not leaving. That's how you save the lake. You mm-hmm. know that you're going to be here, and your children's children's going to be here, and that you want the best for them. Your children are coming. There's no stopping that. Your children are coming. And the best way that you can provide for them is to make sure they have a home to come to. Just like how my ancestors gave that home to me. We give thanks for that. It's a very, it's so deep in us that this has continued, this whole circle keeps continuing. And how do you start that? I guess you start that with you and your family, and you tell your grandchildren, and you tell your relatives, and you think Onondaga is our home. And that's what makes it sacred to you. Then you can learn about who we are and what our place in history is. But until you have that within yourself, it's you almost treat it, it's like a sidebar, Onondaga Lake as a sidebar, not as a part of.
Ed, you've been involved for a while now, traveling, going around the community and asking people for their vision of Onondaga Creek and Onondaga Lake. What are you hearing from the community?
One of the important lessons we've learned from the community is that people want clean water in a healthy environment, and not for human use purposes. The experts and the agencies and the organizations that we work with were telling us that we're going to hear what people want, that people are self-centered and that their interests were motivated by what they wanted to do, and that the recreational aspects of the creek and the lake are what we wanted, we're going to hear about. And surprisingly, we heard things like, well, I may never swim in the lake, but I want it swimmable. I may never eat the fish, but I want them edible. And so the intrinsic, innate value of the environment is important to the public.
You were listening to a panel on the effort to restore Onondaga Lake, held last October as part of the educational series on Onondaga land rights and our common future. Thanks to Andy Major and the neighbors of the Onondaga Nation for their assistance. You can learn more and get involved at peacecouncil.net/noon, N-O-O-N, peacecouncil.net/noon. And you can download this and previous shows at our website, unwelcomeguests.org. Thank you for listening.